Listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are here on this wonderful show of mine called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We've got an action-packed show today, a packed studio. Ellen Little is here with me as usual, and Paul is running the board, Pastor Paul. So for those who are... thank you. That was a nice good morning. For those who are tuning in, we have two segments today. The first segment is with the students from Stone Magnet Middle School. We have Emily. Hello, Emily. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
We have Leanne. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
We have JC, Nicole, and Mrs. McWinney is here as well. Did I say it right?
McWinney.
She's here. And also we have Laura Lee, who is Nicole's mom. But before we go into their segment, which they're going to be talking about rip currents that's happening right here on our beaches and beaches all over the United States and actually all over the world, beach safety. And I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. We call the current there, Ellen, I was telling you, the riptide, is it called here? We call it quicksand. So the girls are going to be zeroing on talking about that. The second segment, we've got an attorney calling in from Miami in between taking care of his case over there, I think is what he told us. His name is Christopher Benjamin, and he's the founder of the Barrister Firm. He is going to be calling in to talk about restoration of rights. And that is a topic that is near and dear to my heart as well, because our friend Desmond Mead was on our show, I think it was last year, to talk about the restoration of voting rights for people who had served their time. And so that's a really nice topic to talk about on this Monday. But before we do that, I just wanted to say, this morning as I was prepping for the show, I saw President Obama on CNN. They unveiled his official portrait, very beautiful colors, vibrant colors. He was in a classic pose, very interesting, lush background. I thought it was very nice. There were roses in the back. And he talked about outstanding leadership. He thanked his staff, and he also talked about what makes great leaders. And one of the things he said, anything is possible if we show respect and lift each other's up, that we should always remember that families all across America are working very hard to do their best. And one of the things he talked about, which I thought was really interesting, was the stories that we pass on to our children through our wisdom and our experience. And I thought, how fitting. We need that right now. So, and of course, with children coming on the show to talk about the beach safety, I thought that would be great.
I just want to add, Sita, that it's the Future Problem Solvers group. So this is a fantastic organization that's here in town. Every school in, I think in the nation, has an option for this and to make sure that they can have a school group. So talk about future leaders and future problem solvers. This is a great organization to be a part of.
Well, you know, these children from the Stone Magnet Middle School, they remind me of something that I read a long time ago about leadership. And it says, what is leadership? Leadership are people in a great position to change the environment and influence human behavior. And I thought about these four awesome children who were here today, and I thought, these children are going to be very, very successful for the mere simple fact that they can develop good discipline and thinking that would change their lifetime habits. so that they will become, they will always be thinkers, they will be problem solvers. And I think one of them would be running for office, who knows, later on in life. I could just, yeah. So anyway, so Emily is here, and Emily's mother is my friend, Laura is my friend as well. We're going to start first with JC, so she can tell the listeners on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7 a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm JC. I'm a seventh grader at Stone Magnet Middle School, and I am on the community problem-solving team Project Paradise.
Right, and next we're going to go to Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily from Stone Magnet Middle School, and I'm part of Project Paradise.
And then Leanna, Leanne.
Hi, I'm Leanne. I'm a seventh grader at Stone Magnet Middle School, and I'm a part of the Stone's CMPS project, Project Paradise.
And the next one is Nicole.
Hi, I'm Nicole, and I'm a seventh grader at Stone Magnet Middle School, and I'm a part of the CMPS project, Project Paradise.
Right. You know, the good thing about them is they have a lot of self-esteem. They're full of confidence, which is what we want. In today's world where so many kids are tuned into their phones and social media, statistics are showing that children are not getting enough exposure with other adult, with other children and other adults, and getting engaged, staying engaged in their community. And one of the ways you stay engaged and you build up your self-confidence is to stay engaged. And they're doing that, which is awesome. So I was telling them that I was reading a little bit about the show before we came on today, and I was reading about the beach, and they said one of the dangers at the beach is not just the rip currents, but also coconuts falling and hitting you on your head. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I never thought about it, but they're saying, and the simplest thing you can do is not put your beach chair where a coconut could fall and hit you. That's it. So we're going to start with a real reason why they're here, and they're here to talk about the rip currents. So how did the Project Paradise? So how did you guys come up with this idea? And I think we'll ask JC.
So beach safety is a very important topic, and we thought it would be a good idea to do a community problem-solving team to educate our community about its importance.
And so, Emily, why is beach safety so important?
Well, in Brevard County, there's a lot of beaches, and we just want to make sure our community stays safe while having fun.
So, and the rip currents are also known as the undertow. They are very powerful channels of water near the shoreline that flow away from land. They're often difficult to spot, and to make matters very worse, the rip currents can race at dizzying, dangerous speeds of up to 8 feet per second. So, Leonie, what can you tell our listeners a little bit more about these rip currents?
Well, rip currents aren't as easy to spot as you might think, because the color changes as the rough waters underneath the water are like churning the sand, and it often you can tell if there's rip current because the water will be often very rough in that area, and you can see the sand floating to the top of the water, which is not like...
It's misleading.
Yes.
Yes.
Because it'll be brown, like the water will be brown or like a gray color, while other areas of the beach will be blue or green color.
Yeah. And I know Nicole is sitting next to me. So Nicole, you know what? I've seen beach flags, but I guess I'm a little bit naive because I don't really go to the beach that much. For various reasons, of course. Yeah, I can't swim. You know, I've had a pool forever and I can't swim. So I'm afraid, right? So what is the purpose of the beach flags?
So the purpose of the beach flags is to show you that there's high rip currents or there's dangerous marine life in the water. So when the red flag is waved, is up, it means the surf is high or has dangerous currents or a combination of both. And if a double red flag is raised, it means that the beach is closed to the public because it's too dangerous and the rip currents are life-threatening. And the yellow flag, which means the ocean conditions are rough but aren't life-threatening. And the green flag means that there's low threat conditions and give the all-clear sign to beachgoers. Then we also have the blue flag, which means dangerous marine life has been spotted. And JC can tell you a little bit more about what type of marine life you might see.
Okay, JC, so you, do you do a lot of studying about marine life? Is that why she's saying to ask you?
Yeah, my research was on marine life, which is the purple flag. And basically this is telling you that there is dangerous marine life such as sharks or jellyfish. And the jellyfish are most likely to be the man of war, which have been washing up really recently on our beaches. So, and they're very dangerous. So when you see the purple flag, it is a sign that you probably do not want to get in the water.
I would think, right? So Emily, how can a beachgoer swim out of a rip current?
A beachgoer should swim parallel to the shore when caught in a rip current, and then they should gradually swim into the shore during the beach.
And so tell me, so what should a person do, Emily, if they're going out to the beach and they know they want to go out and swim?
Well, before they go to the beach, they should do research online for the specific beach they're going to see the water conditions. And then once they get there, they should look at the beach flag or the water to see if there's any noticeable rip currents or water conditions.
Yeah. And I would think that you should always swim with a buddy as well, right?
Yes.
Right? Do you all agree?
Definitely.
Leonie, do you agree with that? That people should always take a buddy with them? And why should they do that?
I agree with the statement that people should always swim with a buddy, because if you're not with anyone and you need help and there's not any lifeguards at that specific beach that you're going to, you need someone to be able to either call help or help you out of the water if they're strong enough swimmers, if there is a rip current and you don't know like the proper way to get out of one.
And Nicole, there's so many topics that somebody could pick, right? Why did you guys pick educating the community on beach safety?
Well, we went through multiple topics and we observed at our beaches and we noticed that a lot of beachgoers don't seem to be around the lifeguards, and that the lifeguard stands aren't up all year round. So it's important that they know the different hazards so they know how to be safe when there isn't a lifeguard around them.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Like a lot of places have empty stands. Like the lifeguard stand is there, but there's no lifeguard. That's something we might have to look into. I see you're shaking your head, JC. Why do you think it's empty?
Well, sometimes the lifeguards aren't always present at the lifeguard stands. And, like, there might not be on that day. So the people at the beaches should most likely probably, they won't have the flags up, so they won't be aware. So they should really just observe the beaches, waters, and if they see any strange signs.
Yeah. And, Emily, our community gets involved in beach cleanup. We get involved in Keep Brevard Beautiful. We get involved in so many things. Why do you think this is such a community effort to be aware of what's going on our beaches?
Everybody should be aware about how to stay safe at the beach so they don't get in any type of situation where they can get hurt. And it is very important that they understand the rip currents in the beach flags so that they can't get hurt.
Yeah, I would think so, right?
We have a lot of tourists, right? And tourists need to know just as much.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of the main reasons why we have this show called Viewpoint with Sita and friends here on AM 1510 WWBC, because Ellen and I use the show as a forum to educate the public and give out valuable information, whether the information is about opening a business, whether it's running for office, whether it's talking about public education and how to get more teachers in our schools and pay them a little bit more, who knows, whatever it is. Sometimes we even talk to people who are running nonprofits and they want to do things for children after school, like the Boys and Girls Club that I just attended that. Or we just talk to people who want to be part of social justice and social issues. And I find this is a really good topic, because how many people want to go out and have fun? Going to the beach is free, as long as you can find a parking spot and you stay away from coconuts, of course, right? But one of the things, Leonie, I think we should also tell our listeners about and our friends is about sharks, right? And we were talking earlier about if you're bleeding, not to go into water, right?
Yes. Another thing that you probably should not wear into the water is shiny bathing suits, jewelry, anything that can attract, like anything that would attract you, like salty foods, like your blood.
Salty foods,
my
really?
My blood reminds me of like salty foods. I don't know why. Just like the smell, and blood is definitely one of the main things that attracts sharks, and that's what attracts them. Sharks can smell blood from miles away, and I would really not go in the water if you are bleeding, if you have any open wounds, and I don't know, just very, very unsafe to go in the water.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention to the signs. Why do you think, Nicole? Because sometimes you'll see a sign that says, just swim this far in. But next, you're looking and you see somebody way out there. So what do you think, what happens when people, they just don't pay attention or they just don't want to listen and follow rules? Like, you guys follow rules. You guys go to your school and you listen every day and follow rules.
I think that people just don't realize how dangerous it is. Like, okay, maybe only swim out so far, but they're really thinking, well, what could happen to me?
So they're daring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is a good time to give a shout out to the principal and staff and parents at Stone Magnet Middle School. And your program again is called the
Future Problem Solvers, and we're a community problem-solving project.
Yes. How'd you guys come up with that name, JC, to call it Future Problem Solvers? Was that something that the school implemented, or you guys did that?
Well, the Future Problem Solvers was already, like, the group. And then you go more into further depth, which we made it into a team for CMPS as Project Paradise.
It's amazing. And you know, that's one of the nice things about Brevard County, our school system here. This is a magnet school, it's a public school. They do so much for the kids, and it takes a lot for the teachers to be involved, the parents, a lot of coordination, because it's a commitment, right? And so, Emily, how has this project impacted you?
Well, my family goes to the beach a lot, and before this project and before we did research, I didn't really know a lot about the beach flags or how to identify rip currents. So now when I go to the beach, I'm looking for those signs and I understand how to stay safe.
So it's making you more aware?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You know, life is about becoming more aware once you're educated on something. Like, I never used to recycle a lot until my husband started pointing out all these things about recycling. And now I'm really careful. Like, if I drink some water and I have a water bottle, I would take it home and put it in my recycling bin because I'm more aware of what's happening, you know?
And we have a website that's project-paradise@webnode.com, which allows the viewers to go on our website and research. We have a research on there so they can learn a little bit more about the beach flags and the rip currents.
And Leonie, how did you guys come up with your website? Who helped design your website? And because you guys now, you have a card, you have a phone number, you have a website, and you're representing your school extremely well. I'm amazed at how disciplined they are, and they've come so far with this project. So tell us, who's helping you with all of that?
We actually did research about how we could make a website without having to necessarily pay lots of money to have it like designed and everything like that. So we found webnode.com, which allows us to create a free website, and JC helped us design the page, and we all put information and research into the page.
JC's getting a high five from Ellen. So we have about 10 more minutes left of this segment, maybe less, I'm not sure, but we're going to keep going until Pastor Paul tells her to stop. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go around to each girl, and JC, we'll start with you. What are some of the tips you can give to the community to make sure they stay safe?
Okay, so number one, obviously whenever you go to the beach or before you go to the beach, make sure you do research about where you're going, and make sure you know what's happening. So like for the wet, the water conditions and the marine life, and it's just a good idea to get a perspective on it.
Yeah.
Before you go in.
And what about you, Emily?
Well, I advise the listeners to make sure they understand what a rip current looks like so they can identify one when they're at the beach.
Good one, yeah. And what about you, Leonie?
I would make sure that if you do get stuck in a rip current, to make sure you do not panic, because that will bring you further out in the water because you're not paying attention to how far out you're going. You want to pay attention on taking nice deep breaths and stroking parallel to the shore and gradually working your way into the shore.
Yeah, because when you panic, you get very anxious quickly, and then you do the wrong things. That's what happened to me. That's why I didn't learn to swim, because my son pushed me into the deep end 20 years ago in our own pool, and I couldn't come out. And so then they said, oh, look, there's mom. She's drowning. Let's help her. So my daughter jumped in and pulled me out, and I said, she goes, were you faking that? I'm like, no, I was almost at the bottom of the pool. I said, there goes your college plans and everything else. So I never went back in. So now I they give me like a marker. I have like a little spot. They'll say, Mom, if we're not home, don't get in the pool. But if you happen to do it, here's the mark. Don't go past it. So I send a shallow end. It's scary. It really is. So, Nicole, what about you? What advice do you have for our listeners on WWBC AM 1510?
I would say that parents, like, when they see the signs at the beach, they should explain them to their children, because it's, like, a lot of parents, they stay on shore and let their kids go in the water, and they lose sight of them, or the kids want to go further out in the water. So I think it's important that the kids know the beach flags and how to swim out of rip currents and understand those signs.
So the parents should keep the children in the line of sight at all times. You know, she's so right, because a lot of parents, they go to the beach and they want to relax. And they put up their little shed and it's Saturday and, you know, they want to have a good time. And the kid is playing and before you know it, the child is out in the water and other people are watching those kids. So it's not fair for other people to be watching your children. If you take them to the beach, keep an eye on them, because, it, you know, they can drown in a split second. Especially with that riptide business, what I call the quicksand. You know, Ellen likes that. So when you guys were here, to shift gears a little bit, the last time we talked about sunburn. So let me hear from Miss Emily a little bit. How did that project turn out that you guys were working on the effect of the rays of the sun on the skin?
The last time we were here, we talked about our project that was more about sun and heat safety and how to stay safe, like when you're in the sun. And we educated people about wearing sunscreen and making sure they're well hydrated while they're in the sun.
Yeah, I think we talked about sunscreen and shade, protective clothing, and that the CDC recommended using sunscreen with a minimum SPF of 15, was it 15 or more? And advises that tightly woven fabric offers better protection than loose knits. Now, you know, we learn a lot on this show, and that was one of the things I remember them talking about when they were here. So, Nicole, give us that website one more time for the future problem solvers from Stone Magnet Middle School.
Okay, our website is project-paradise.webnode.com.
And so JC, we're going to go around to all four of you and ask you guys, when you came up with this project, was it challenging? And how do you manage to keep up your grades, get to school on time, and still find the time to stay engaged in your community and do a project like this?
Right. So on Monday mornings, we made a schedule that we gather and with our teacher, Miss McWinnie, and we discuss about the problems and our team and events that we can go to help us be more involved with beach safety.
Right. And Emily, what about you? Because you have siblings as well. Are they involved in stuff like this as well, or just you?
Yes, my brother is also a part of Future Problem Solving, and he competes in it too.
Right. And Leonie, if there's a child out there that's saying, you know what, I my plate is full. I just can't get my homework done, get ready on time, do chores at home, and get involved, what would you say to them? How do you fit that time in?
I would say definitely focus on your schoolwork more, but CMPS is fun. I don't think of it as homework. I think of it as just, it's like a hobby to me. I have a lot of fun doing it. I don't worry about it as much as homework.
Right. And what about you, Nicole? Same question. How do you stay involved? I bet it's challenging as well, but your mom seems to be very involved as well, which is a plus, right?
Right. So it's very challenging, but I'm really passionate about this project, and it's really important for our community. So I always make time to do CMPS and make sure my community's being safe.
Yeah. So what's next for you guys? I mean, I'm sure that there's a competition, right? And you guys want to go to a competition. Is it a competition?
Yes.
Yeah, so Emily, tell us a little bit about what's in, I mean, you have goals, and obviously you're doing everything right to see if you could put Stone Magnet Middle School on the map and go to this competition. How can we help, and what is it all about?
Well, when we go to competition, we show the judges our project and how much we've educated our community, and then it's based off of how much we've educated them and how much we've helped them.
Yeah. What about you, JC? Do you have any aspirations to go to, what would you guys call it? Is it a competition, or is it finals, or what is it? Because there has to be a place where everybody from all over the United States is coming to see all these problem solvers and what they're working on.
Well, first we have a state competition, and then if we move on, we go to the international conference.
And we should have Miss McQuinney, we should have her come on the mic for a second. I wanted to ask her how she got involved in this because you know, the thing is, you know, it takes a village, right? It takes a village for all of us to do things for our children and stay engaged in a community. And I'm really grateful that there are teachers like you who are willing to do this for our children. So tell us a little bit how you got involved, because you also have a family, you have a class to teach, and yet still you find the time to give back to the children at the Stone Magnet Middle School.
Yes, so hi, I'm Miss McWinnie. It was my second or third year at Stone Magnet Middle School. We were in a faculty meeting and the principal asked, we need an FPS sponsor. And I had done FPS while I was in school as well at Mel High. So then I went to the principal and said, I'll take it over. And I've been doing it ever since. I think this is my eighth year.
Well, we
year.
Thank you for that, because these girls, they're amazing. They've got leadership skills. They're disciplined. They're what we want in our children. And you guys are doing a really great job at Stone Magnet Middle School. So before we go off air, we're going to have JC. Do you have anything else to tell all listeners about your project that we didn't get to cover? Any topics, any part of the conversation that we didn't hit on?
So we do have, besides our website, we also have an email that people can talk to us about. It's called Project Paradise CMPS at yahoo.com, and that's how we can just talk to them if they have any questions or want to say anything. But everything else, I think we pretty much covered it all.
Yeah.
And beach safety is really important, especially in Brevard County, and we are just really passionate about
it. And what about you, Emily, before we go off air? Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I advise the listeners to be aware of what they're doing at the beach and just to be safe.
And Leonie?
I think that everyone should just stay safe and have fun, but stay safe mainly.
Yes, and my Nicole right next to me here.
I would just say, just stay safe, have fun.
I like they're all focused on safety, because, you know, when you go out with your friends, that's the number one thing that a parent worries about. You want to make sure that your children have a buddy. No matter if they go to the mall, if they go to the movies, if they go to the beach, if they go to the park for a walk, that's most parents, and I know speaking from a mom's point of view, we all want our children to be associated with other children with good values, and they're disciplined and they listen. And if there's something going on, you are able to be a friend. Not, you know, a lot of people cut and run. But you want to make sure if there's trouble and disaster that your children are with someone who would look out for them, because they've got the same family values and they've got the same ideas about what's going on. So I think it's great.
And way to go picking a project at the beach.
Yeah.
Like, what a way to get some good research in, you know, at a fun place.
Well, they've got good
parents. I suggest
parents.
Roller coasters next time.
Well, you know what?
Trajectory of roller coasters.
You know what it shows me is that you have awesome parents who are very involved in your lives, and I commend them for that. And also, they're from a great school. I mean, nothing in life happens if you don't have a great foundation at home and proper guidance. And the four of you, Emily, Leanne, JC, and Nicole, you've got that. So in life, they say you need four things: family, friends, a little food, and a little finances. And it looks like you guys got that.
You're all set.
So that was
so
a great segment.
So we're going to take a quick break now, Sita, so we can hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back on the air with Christopher Benjamin.
That's
Portions
right.
Of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars.
Cloud 9 Sleep Shop in the Merritt Square Mall has expanded to meet the growing needs of the community and customers. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop now has a 10,000 square foot showroom with a wider variety of choices for customers to shop for bedroom, living room, and dining room furniture from nationally recognized brands such as Ashley Furniture. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop also carries memory foam mattresses from Serta, Ashley Sleep, Enso, and many more. Cloud 9 has furniture to meet the needs of budget-minded customers with quality furniture. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop is a family-owned business that understands the needs of growing families. Furnish your home with one-stop shopping from Cloud 9 Sleep Shop. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop, centrally located in Brevard at the Merritt Square Mall. For more information, go to their website at cloud9sleepshop.com.
When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. I'm just chatting away here.
You're doing great, as always.
Yeah. You know what? This is what happens when you have a fun, unscripted show.
That's right. Live.
You don't really have time to fool around here. You just got to do your stuff, right? And that's why I love our station and being on air here, because it's such a nice atmosphere. It makes you feel very relaxed.
Yes.
And those kids were awesome.
They are. They're incredibly engaged and just excited about making the universe a better place, which is awesome.
It's all about connections.
Amen.
And communication. So our second segment is with Christopher Benjamin, and he's calling in. He's an attorney with the barrister firm in Miami, Florida. And he's calling in this morning to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, something that we talk about all the time, Ellen, and it's the restoration of rights.
Yes.
And we've had Desmond Mead on our show. We had an entire hour with him last year. And now this is back in the news again. It's going to be on the ballot. So I thought it's a good time to talk about it because, as we all know, in Florida, if you're ever convicted, a lot of people didn't get their rights to vote. Different governors, things change.
That's right.
Right? So we have Christopher Benjamin on the phone, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about this. So thank you, and welcome for calling in, Mr. Benjamin.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we start talking about the restoration of rights.
Okay. Okay. I'm a practicing attorney here in Miami, Florida. My practice serves the Tri-County area. Our practice is what we call a common law practice or a general practice. We handle most of the types of cases that a common person would come in contact with during the course of their lifetime. So we handle a good bit of law for a lot of folks. I'm also a mediator with Solomon and Goldberg mediation firm and a traffic hearing officer for 90-day courts.
Thank you. Well, you know, here in Florida, I've been reading about almost 1.5 million Floridians fall into this category of where they're not able to vote, right? And we all talk about jobs and education and unemployment. We talk about happiness. And everybody at the end of the day, they want to be appreciated and they want to be given a second chance. And so this restoration of rights, in my mind, this is what it does. It gives people a second chance of life. So tell us a little bit about why I've been reading some of your Facebook posts and things that we've been talking about. And I find that the train of thought is almost the same with you as well. So tell us a little bit about why you got involved in this issue. Of course, being an attorney, you are, but a little bit more, you're more in depth.
I mean, and Facebook disputes are always interesting. But for me, you know, it's about when are we going to forgive the folks who have served their debt to society? You know, if you go into prison because of whatever you've done and you've served the time that you were ordered to serve and you're coming out, the expectation is that you're going to now become a law-abiding citizen. But no one talks about all the roadblocks that are placed in front of you in order to be able to do that. You know, felons, you know, ex-felons face, you know, a number of obstacles to leading an ordinary life when they come out, but so much, there's so much expectation put on them to do such. And I think that we've set up circumstances by which we cause recidivism.
Yeah, and you know, most states restore voting rights upon a person leaving prison or when all terms of his or her sentence is complete. Why is it not so in Florida?
You know, and the previous governor, Charlie Crist, when he was governor in 2007, he tried to attack that issue, and he tried to restore as many rights as he can. But once he left office and our current governor came to office in 2011, they said that what they were concerned with was the folks who have served their debt to society. That's how I see them. Those folks who have served the debt to society, they wanted to ensure that these people would live a crime-free life. And so they imposed a 5 to 7 year wait period, even though they had completed all the terms of their sentencing.
Yeah, and Florida Constitution has been revised a number of times since 1860s, but a blanket ban on voting by formerly convicted felons has remained and is still in our Constitution today, and it affects African Americans more than any other race. Is this not something that politically and socially we should be working on together?
I mean, definitely, because without a restoration of rights, they have a number of hurdles to get over to lead an ordinary life like you and I. You know, they can't vote, they can't serve on a jury, they can't hold public office. There are licenses which they can't obtain in order to provide for themselves economically. There is housing discrimination in some areas. With regards to not allowing them to live in certain areas. So there are a number of hurdles that they face without a restoration of rights.
Right. It's a moral injustice. It really is. And I'm amazed that it took this long for, you know, people like you, Mr. Benjamin and Desmond Mee to actually get this started. Before them, there were other people that were working on this as well, correct? Before you guys. I know you'd send me a text about there was another person who was working on not just restoring the voting rights, but restoring all rights for the nonviolent crimes.
And that's, and the name escapes me at this time, but there's a bill going through the legislature within, in terms of committees right now, to change the process by which a person is restored their rights in Florida.
And clemency,
what
right?
What that legislature is looking to do is to remove it from the current office of the executive clemency, where you have the governor and three of his cabinet members who meet four times a year and only hear about 100 cases each time they meet to determine the restoration of civil rights. Recently a judge found that process to be unconstitutional, and which is interesting because if that process is unconstitutional, then the question becomes, then what process do we use? Now, this particular legislature has set up a process in his legislation to have a new process, and the process is mostly judicial, and much like the process in sealing and expunging your record, where you go before a court to make the and have a court determines whether you should have your civil rights restored.
So what benefit is it for the Florida legislature not to deal with this problem? I mean, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't the governor and the leadership deal with this issue?
I mean, other than politics and a perception of what these new restored voters are going to do with their vote, there is no benefit really from not restoring these folks' rights. You just continue to punish people who already served their debt, who've already paid their debt. It's a lifelong punishment, and in many instances, it causes recidivism.
Right.
Yeah. Because
even rentals. I mean, when you're trying to find a rental, you know, you get out of serving your time. The first thing they do is ask you for a rental application, and if you have to put down that you had a felony, most tenant or most landlords are not going to take you. And that's one of the prejudices that's happening. And that's a simple one. And you should be able to find a house. You should be able to find a place to live when you come out.
Well, the thing
and
is,
not have that over hanging over your head.
Well, and the thing is, we all talk about second chances, and we talk about being thy brother's keeper. Well, if you don't give people a chance when they come out, like you say, you're checking a box, and then people, they discriminate against you just because that box is checked. They're not going to ask you, what type of crime was it? Did you serve time? Are you enrolled in college? I mean, you can't even get a loan to go to college sometime or to buy a home, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing has far-reaching implications.
Does the act or the legislation that's in right now have any stipulations on it, like for sex offenders, for instance, or violent crimes?
You know, and that's what people are looking at. People are looking at what's being proposed. And those types of questions are being asked in terms of how are we going to deal with those aspects? How are we going to deal with sex offenders? How are we going to deal with violent crime offenders? We know that the movement by Desmond Mee is about restoring people's right to vote. And so those types of issues wouldn't come into play. And I think that's a movement worth watching. That's a movement worth supporting. And that's going to be on the ballot. They received the number of signatures needed to be placed on the ballot, and I think that those two issues need to be looked at separately. I think that we need to give these give these ex-felons their right to vote back. You disenfranchised, you know, millions of people in Florida are disenfranchised without the right to vote, and it's a core right. It's a core principle in the United States to be able to vote for your elected officials. And it doesn't matter who you're voting for, what party you're voting for. It's the point of being able to cast a vote, and it's core to who we are as Americans.
Right, and I think that's the statistics that show it's almost 1 in 10 Floridians are affected by this.
Yeah. Well, and I was just going to ask, too, that, you know, maybe give our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends what a definition of a felony is, because I think some people think that that it does have to be those violent crimes or sex offenses that are felonies, and actually there's some pretty low-grade felonies that, that you should get your right to vote right away without even any question.
Well, a simple thing like trespassing on an orange grove or a construction site. I mean, you can get arrested
for that.
Well,
there's a felony on the books about releasing helium balloons into the air. So yeah. There's some silly ones out there.
You know, driving three times, being found driving without a license becomes a felony.
Yes.
As a habitual traffic offender. I mean, there's so many things that, I mean, and you got to think about it. Third degree felonies, most of these things are characterized as third degree felonies, which is the lowest felony in our system. And most of them are nonviolent, but then you lose everything.
You lose all your rights. So when is one eligible for restoration of civil rights? Is there a waiting period, and is there like different categories to the crime and a waiting period?
Well, the governor, the executive office of clemency has it set up that there's a 5 to 7 year waiting period, and this is 5 to 7 years after you have served all the terms of your sentence, whether that be probation or parole or whatever it is. You must have completed all the terms of your sentence before the clock starts to tick. So after you've done everything, then the clock starts to tick at 5 to 7 years. So you have to wait 5 to 7 years because the government says, we want to see if you can live a crime-free life. And some of the factors that they look at. Here's some of the factors that they look at. They look at the nature of the offense. What was your prior or subsequent criminal record? And in that, they include traffic offenses. They want to know what your employment history is, despite the fact that felons face the greatest challenge in employment. They want to know what your mental health or drug issue, whether you have any mental health or drug issues, whether you have any domestic violence issues. And then they also consider any letters in support or opposition to your restoration application. And so, and then they only hear 100 people per hearing, and they only have hearings 4 times a year. Currently, the backlog is somewhere like 20,000 applications for restoration of rights that are stuck in the pipeline.
And there's different categories as well. I was reading, like I went on the web and I was reading, I got dizzy how many different categories there are after this waiting period for someone to actually be considered getting their rights back to vote or to get a home or a loan or even go to college. I mean, what can we do as citizens to help this backlog? Besides, I mean, we're going to be voting on the amendment to restore people's rights, but what else can we do? I mean, how can we spread more information about this?
I think first and foremost, we need to support the movement to restore their voting rights. And that's going to be on the ballot coming in November. I think we need to support that movement. I think we need to look at what's going on in our state legislature right now in terms of the new process that's being looked at in terms of restoration of civil rights. And shows like this, you know, to keep people informed about what the process is, how to go through the process, and hopefully, with a change of administration, information, more light on the subject, you know, people will begin to understand the uphill battle that our ex-felons face, and why it's so important for us to support them and to make sure that they have a more seamless flow back into society.
Is there a group in the Department of Corrections that sort of helps maybe in the last parts of the term of the sentence, if you will, to call it lack of a better word, to help them, the people that are the felons, help them through some of this process so that they understand it?
You know, I haven't heard of any program that does that. And you have to understand, too, that, you know, you may have served some prison time, but you may still be get out on parole, or you may still have some probation to do after you serve your actual prison sentence. So the process now is, and the process has been, that you need to have done all your time, whatever it is.
Right, and we just want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Attorney Christopher Benjamin. He's taking the time to call in on our show from Miami, Florida. He's with the barrister law firm. Are you the founder of the barrister firm, Christopher?
Yes, so
that we have to change that. He is the founder of the Barrister Law Firm. And, you know, I just want our listeners to know that in Florida, a convicted felon cannot vote, serve on a jury, or hold public office. And this is one of the things that Desmond Mead had talked about when he came on our show to talk about his engagement in this national campaign to reduce mass incarceration, reduce gun violence in the urban communities, and re-enfranchise over 5 million returning citizens nationally to vote. So I want to ask you a question. So when people leave the prison system, if they don't have the assistance that they need for these second chances, don't they, you would find a lot of them would go back to the same communities that they came from, that they had this criminal activity before. So now you have people that are looking and following these people for 7 years. But if you don't give them a chance to get an apartment, to get a home, to go back to school and be part of society, then are we setting them up to fail, Christopher?
I mean, that's my take on it. If you look at all the roadblocks that they encounter once they leave the prison system or once they complete their term, I mean, it's so many roadblocks that they face. And to me, the expectation that we have on them is not fair. In that instance, if we're going to have all these roadblocks, I think that we have to start tearing down some of these roadblocks to have them enter back into society. You know, we got to let them have a way to take care of their families, to feed their families, to protect their families. We got to let them become citizens again.
And on the Florida Commission on Offender Review, that it's a 2014, so it's a little bit old summary. It says right on there that the percentage of parolees who've actually successfully completed their supervision without revocation within the first 2 years, which just means that they've come out, they've gotten off their sentence, and they're living life, 94%. So we go back to that 6% of the people who become repeat offenders. So for the 94% of the population, it just sounds like the right thing to do.
Right. So what can we do on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to help? I mean, is there a website that we can direct or listeners to go to? Of course, we are going to tell people to please register to vote, because this affects not just us, but everybody knows someone who has committed a crime, nonviolent, or other ones that on a case-by-case basis, and it affects them as well. So how can we help? Is there a website we can go to and encourage people to pay more attention to this?
I say follow Desmond Mead's website with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, FloridaRRC.com.
So focus our energy there for now, because that's what's happening, that's what's going to be on the ballot.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, Christopher, so what else can we do? I mean, we were trying to talk to people that, you know, you just can't say, I believe in second chances. We have to get our communities involved and engage the churches, maybe the private public sector partnership. What else can we do so that people pay attention to something like this? Because, you know, you've got young people that go into prison or and they come back out, and some people claim that they come back more hardened than they went in. So should we be looking at prison reform as well? Should we be looking at the sentences and who's getting sentenced and who's getting a longer sentence than the other for the same crime?
Well, let me tell you, Sita, that could be a whole nother show, let me tell you.
Yes.
Because, you know, all of those things play a part in how they are received, how they come back to us. Sometimes these are one-time offenders. You know, these are people who made a mistake. They're paying for their mistake. And then the expectation is that they rejoin us in society and don't make those type of mistakes again. Then we have to start tearing down the barriers that we place for them when they come out. Somebody's got to be there to give them a job. You know, somebody's got to be there to, you know, let them rent an apartment. You know, somebody's got to be there to, you know, allow them to have a license or create a business of their own. So we have to start tearing down these roadblocks that we place in front of them with the irrational expectation that they're somehow are not going to go back to a life that they had before they went in. The conditions that they face when they come out are against them.
Yeah. Well, I think what we do set some people up to fail, and I hope that it's, you know, people who are listening, whether it's our friends of the show or people who are going to download the show. And by the way, Christopher, we do get about 2,000 downloads per week of our show. I'm hoping that people would start thinking differently. Because when you start thinking differently and think outside of the box, you can say, well, maybe instead of locking somebody up for a speeding ticket or whatever, you can have somebody from the community come in and sit and speak with this person. And we could change people's lives by just showing that we have the compassion to listen to them. And I think most of the times, a lot of these people, they just want somebody to guide them and listen and communicate what else is there for them, instead of just locking them up.
Yeah, greater emphasis on drug rehabilitation, a greater emphasis on mental health awareness. Those are two big areas that cause people to commit crime, that cause people to go to jail. We need to really look at these issues as well and how we address those issues. Prison can't be the first, it should not be the first remedy to those issues.
You know, I have friends who are nurses in the prison system, and we were talking about some of the drugs that they give to the prisoners, and a friend of mine made a really good comment, and she said, you know, a lot of the drugs we give are antidepressants. And it seems as though sometimes the prisons are being used as a mental ward for people who have issues with depression and anxiety and insomnia and things like that. And I wonder why, you know, we don't have people who run for office and who are in our communities. Why aren't they focusing on that sort of thing instead of just locking people up?
And that's an interesting question as to why don't we have more people who run for office? But I see it a little bit differently. I see, why don't we as a society saying of the people who are running for office, this is what we find important. We find these things important. So what is your position on these things that we find important? We think it's important that people who have mental issues, people who have debilitating drug addictions, that they find help outside of prison. We think that's important. Yeah, we want you to be tough on violent crime and violent criminal offenders, but we also want a response or an appropriate response to people who have mental issues, who may be committing crime because of the mental issues, people who have drug addictions, who may be committing crime because of drug addiction. We need a more appropriate response to those factors that cause crime.
Well, we need the politicians to be fair as well and not only worry about re-election, but actually going to the communities, and maybe they should sit down and speak with people and find out what difficulties are you having when you're released. And maybe if they compile a list of all these things, like we talked about, the housing and getting into colleges and getting a job, maybe people can just sit down and start listening and care again. Because I think, you know, when we talk about second chances, this is one of the ways that politicians can help, not just by talking, but actually listening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And then we have to hold them accountable to do what we send them up there to do.
That's right.
Well, we have worked our way up right to the end of our time. Christopher Benjamin, thank you so much for calling in. Once again, thanks to all the ladies that came from Stone Magnet Middle School today to talk about their Project Paradise. And once again, another fantastic viewpoint with Sita and friends. We'll see you next week. Again, Christopher Benjamin, thank you so much for the insight.
Yes, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess you are Lord.